Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. It's Tuesday. That means another episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, we are just 2 days.
2 days.
2 days from our headlining show at SOB's here in New York City, and our dream of selling out the building is so close to becoming a reality thanks to you guys. You've watched our sketches. You've passed along our interviews. You've downloaded our podcasts. You've cranked up the volume when listening to our music, and now you've bought tickets to see us rap, tell stories, and put on a huge show in our voice. We're on the cusp of something very special, and we're asking you, if you have not bought your tickets yet, don't get left out. Buy them now at itsthereal.com. Don't show up on Thursday night hoping that Dan is going to sneak you in. Listen, Dan's got no time for that. He'll be in the green room practicing his Dame Dash dance. Your girls tour, hosted by Combat Jack, DJed by Just Blaze, surprise guests hitting the stage, and of course, it's a night full of It's the Real. Let's make history together. Let's close out strong. We have just 2 days left. Let's sell out SOBs. Jeff, what did we do this week? Anything special?
We were on The Breakfast Club.
Shout out to Charlamagne and Envy and Angela, everybody at The Breakfast Club, Power 105. We had a great time up there.
We did, and the interview is actually doing surprisingly well. The commenters have gone from really hating us because we are white and Jewish to accepting us.
Well, you have to understand, too. I mean, a lot of these people just saw the still, which was us with Kodak Black.
Ski masks, yeah.
Ski masks.
Because he wore a ski mask on Breakfast Club, and so we did too.
And so people just judged us based off of that.
And so the negative votes went up like crazy.
Yeah, but
then
also,
when you watch the interview.
My favorite thing, though, was you looking in the comments and seeing the people who judged us badly at first, flipping and then saying stuff like.
That they take back their dislike. So that's great.
It's that's
and,
nice.
And we're going to be on Ebro in the Morning on Hot 97.
Today
coming
or
out
tomorrow.
Today.
Yeah. Shout out to everyone on Hot 97. Peter, Ebro, Laura, everyone up there. We're really looking forward to Thursday. We've been promoting it like crazy. We've been rehearsing and getting ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm ready too. But first.
Yeah.
I'm excited about today's podcast. Who do we have?
We have Alex Toumet on the podcast today. He is the engineer who has worked with everybody from Young Thug to Travis Scott to Kanye West, just a bunch of people. A
lot of stories.
He has a very famous dog on the internet, Gordy. Shouts to Gordy.
Well, even beyond that, we talked about studio stuff. We talked about traveling with the rodeo tour, so Travis Scott and Sycamore and Chase B and all them. And we talked about being in the studio with all the Atlanta guys like Southside and Metro Boomin and TM88, and it's just a fun podcast. He's a fun personality.
We're happy he lives in New York now.
Shout out to Alex. He's going to be at your girls' tour on Thursday. When do you want to get into this podcast?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Titanic, Traffic Report, a.k.a. Iceberg Slim.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Rock Your Body, a.k.a. Medieval Torture.
Oh, and this is Alex, DJ. Sorry you wasted your money to be here.
Yeah, and this is a waste of time, but it's the real. Alex, what's happening?
Just, you know, chilling, man. Taking a break from working.
No, well, thank you for coming up here during a work day.
Yeah, I mean, work. I did air quotes.
I feel like every moment is a work day for you.
Yeah, I'm on call 24/7. Like, the other night, somebody was in town, I forget who it was, but they called me at like 4 a.m., something like that.
And you picked up?
Yeah.
you forgot who it was?
The phone next to, it happens like every day.
Yeah, but like they say like to get a good night's sleep, you were supposed to like turn like it on to like, you know, the night version of it and to turn the audio off and the vibrate off and put the phone on the other side of the room. This is not you.
I don't know what a good night's sleep is.
Yeah, when's the last
time you have a dog that snores 24/7 anyway, so like.
And you were just telling us that he fucks your couch.
Yeah, he fucks my couch apparently when I'm gone. I think I need to get like one of those baby cams so I could like make sure. Or he's just like eating it. I don't know.
Or
he's doing something.
Or you bring him with you because we know that when you worked with Divine Counsel, you brought him to the studio.
I know. The only reason I didn't bring him here is because he's like snorts and doesn't sit still. But I bring him to every session. He's like the only time he didn't come with me anywhere was when I went to LA last week. But he comes. Like,
and then what do you do?
My brother watches my place. So
does he still fuck your couch?
I mean, I hope not. I hope it's not like a group thing with the two of them.
How long have you had your dog?
Since August.
And
maybe.
It's funny because he's such a big part of your Twitter now persona.
Is, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's like, I work out of my apartment, so he's there all the time, and I'm around no other humans for like days at a time.
Like, I followed on Snapchat, and it's literally all your dog.
Yeah. It's 100% my dog, actually.
He's so good for content, so good for followers.
Yeah. So you recently moved to New York City.
Yep.
How's it been so far?
Different. I mean,
what'd you expect?
I expected more studio work. Mm-hmm. I got a lot more work coming up here, but it's more like labels hitting me up more because they saw that I was around so that I could pull up on them when I'm done with a mix or whatever. But the studios, it's a little different because in Atlanta, it's all studio work. The
right.
studios are calling me like, we need a person for this, we need a person for that. But they already established, they have like, even if the people in their sessions aren't great, they have their people. So it's kind of hard to like just enter into that world.
I mean, do you still have all of your old, I don't want to say clients, but like your old, everybody you were working with in Atlanta, do they still send up their stuff
to you? Yeah, I mean, Metro, the 21 are all traveling and working a lot. So unless I'm traveling with them, I can't record, mm-hmm. but they all send me. Like, Thug just sent me a record, and Metro sent me a few.
Have you worked on, like, those recording buses?
I hate that.
Well, yeah.
I was on Rodeo Tour, and the label didn't plan for me to be on the bus.
So surprise.
There wasn't enough bunks. I slept on the floor or the couch, or you know how on the buses they have, like, the dining room table?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I slept on with, like, the top of my body on one half and the bottom on the other half for a couple of days.
Do your parents worry about you?
All the time. My parents don't know what I do.
Still.
Yeah, I mean, I explained it to them and I showed my dad. My dad's like a musician, so I showed him, but he just...
He doesn't understand the whole sleeping on a jagged sort of...
No. He doesn't follow you on Snapchat.
Wait, so when you're...
He follows me on Twitter. He has a Twitter. And he calls me worried sometimes because of the tweets, but I tell him it's like mostly jokes.
So when you were sleeping like on the bus, mm-hmm. and you're sleeping on the floor of the bus, mm-hmm. did anybody have to cross over you?
Yeah, all the time.
Because it's a bus.
Well, I was always the first awake and last to sleep anyway, because it was me and Travis, so he had a room, which was also the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there until we were done working, and by the time we were done working, everybody had chosen a bunk or... pass out or...
But was it something like there are buses that are equipped to record and they have like a booth that is built in there?
Yeah.
Is that not what that was?
No, it had that.
Okay.
It had that. But even then, the bus has to be turned off and the generator has to be turned on or else the whole bus is vibrating. We tried to record and like the meters are almost in the yellow just from the noise of the bus. And it was a good setup too, other than, you know, the fact that you're in a bus.
And so what are you bringing on tour, like, besides yourself?
For Rodeo, I had actually I think it was when I was living in the Rodeo house, we went straight to the Rodeo tour. So I had all the, just my laptop and like a bag of clothes, a tiny bag. I wore the same thing. Like I said, they didn't plan for me, so I didn't get a hotel when we stopped. I just had to crash on couches in hotels and stuff like that. But there's like 4 or 5 days in a row where I was just wearing like the same jerseys that I bought at every stop. Like,
did you try to convince people it was like a look?
We all were smelling pretty bad.
Wait, so none of those guys, Sycamore, Chase, Travis, they couldn't give you any of like the Rodeo merch?
Oh no, Sick hooked it up. Sick always like let me like, because he was always busy and out, so he would give me his room whenever he could.
Oh, that's
and stuff
awesome.
Like that. Yeah, Sick's great.
All right, you are originally from Florida.
I was born here.
Oh, you were?
I was born in Queens, yeah. And then raised in Florida.
When did you move down to Florida?
When I was 9.
Okay.
As a joke?
Yeah, it was a prank by my parents. Actually, that's not a joke. It was really like they lied to me about moving to Florida.
What they tell you was happening?
They said we were going to Disney World.
And?
Oh, my God.
Wait,
this is
well,
like
at
when
least
you, like,
did you go there?
No.
What?
We drove right past it. I remember. Here's what I distinctly remember about leaving New York is we lived in a courtyard in Queens, so all the kids in that courtyard were magically my age or around my age, and they're all watching us drive away, and my best friend that I knew since like the day I was born is like bawling his eyes out, and I'm smiling because I think I'm going to be back. I just might have been the most oblivious child ever because we lived in a really small one-bedroom with me and my brother and my two parents, and they built a bedroom for me at a, like a 4x8 room, like mm-hmm. Harry Potter style.
You were under the stairs.
Yeah, basically. And when we were leaving, they knocked that wall down that they built because there was a couple or something that didn't want that extra room.
And you didn't see the writing on the wall.
I didn't see the writing on the wall.
Well, it's because the wall was knocked down.
Yeah.
It's
gone. Yeah, I had no idea.
So that really happened.
Yeah. Wait, but the neighbor kid knew and you didn't?
I mean, they all knew, but I was just like, I don't know, I was just like really excited to go to Disney World. Probably like just nothing else was registering.
So we had our friend DJ Jubilee from Mixpack on recently, and she grew up in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and then went to school in Orlando for college, right? And she said when she graduated high school, there was this whole thing where graduating seniors were taken like on buses to Disney World.
Yep.
And so you did this.
Yep.
They shut down the park and it's yours at night.
Simple plan played.
Simple plan.
It was pretty
wow.
Insane.
This is so 2003.
Yeah, it was insane. It was great.
Her big thing was she took acid and experienced whatever ride it was where the alien escapes and they like
yep
yeah and it like breathes on your like thigh and stuff. What and did you ride the monorail? Did you?
I don't think the monorail was open at that time because it's only Magic Kingdom that they let you go in.
Gotcha.
So.
They don't not like whatever the animal park is like.
No, I've never even been to that one.
Your parents didn't drive by it.
We one time when we went to Disney, they just drove us in a circle and looked the entrance way to all the parks. And
you know what that's
home.
Like? Your parents basically took you on the monorail.
Yeah, exactly. But the monorail's expensive, so we just drove around. Like, I was hanging out with the football players, I guess, in my school at the time, and we just like were rolling dice on the bus all the time and then walked around and like. Picked on some kids.
Did you?
Dope.
Yeah.
So talk about a life lesson.
Yeah.
What was high school like in Florida?
Well, so the neighborhood that my parents moved to was like white, affluent, whatever, but I didn't have any friends over there. So I went to a completely, after middle school, like moved to like a completely different neighborhood.
How far away?
Like 25 minutes away. But it was like a international baccalaureate school.
Oh, wow.
So I did that, which I was the worst student in the history of that school.
Wow, congratulations.
I can tell that you were dumb because you didn't know you were moving.
Yeah. No, I'm a fucking idiot. So I snuck my way into the smart kid classes and then failed.
You failed because you were dumb or because... Not be lazy. You were
just
actually
lazy.
Dumb.
I mean, I was like a lazy high school kid. I did the whole... I saw my buddy about this and he laughed at me, so... But I did the whole, like, what's the movie where they, like, do, like, the makeover on the nerdy girl?
Oh, she's all that.
Yeah, I she's all that in myself.
Like, you put on glasses?
No, I opposite of that. No, in middle school, I was, like, the nerdy band kid. I had, like, played sax and all that and, like, drew anime pictures when nobody was around. And,
which,
like,
by the way, is cool now.
Yeah, it's dope. And I wish I just stuck with that. Yeah. I have an amazing job right now.
Were you first chair?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But we were in like a really, it was a really bad high school band.
Oh, don't, come on, don't sell yourself short.
It was bad.
Yeah.
I remember we had like a recital and out of like 40 of us, like 9 showed up.
Well,
what?
And that's how I became first chair. Because I was the only
good attendance,
chair. First and only chair. But I was just kind of like tired of getting picked on. So I like threw all that stuff away, changed all my clothes, bought a surfboard and a guitar.
And you became like, Jack Johnson.
I know.
And then I became... That's a whole other story.
Sandals?
Sandals. I mean, it's Florida.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Nobody wore shoes. I think there was a time when my school like had to like put like their foot down and be like, you have to wear shoes. Stop wearing sandals to school.
Did you actually surf?
Yeah. I mean, my school is right by the beach. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Were the waves like...
Garbage.
Oh, really?
But I mean, Florida has its spots like Sebastian and New Smyrna and stuff like that.
And... Ultimately, how were you as a surfer?
Terrible.
Did you ever have any like really bad falls?
Yep.
And did you break anything?
I broke like a bunch of bones in my foot skimboarding.
But should've I worn real shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And because you know what skimboarding is, where you like take the board, like it's like a flat board.
By the way, no, I don't know what skimboarding is.
Well, skimboarding is like you go into like, shallow water, like.
Oh,
an inch or two deep, and you throw the board, and you run and jump on it, and then you go into the like shore break.
Yeah.
So I was doing that, and I bought like a $20 piece of crap wood board.
It's like moving slip and slide.
Yeah. And I missed it, and it was like, I think it was in Daytona. So the sand on the beach is really compact. Mm-hmm. You can drive on it.
Whoa.
So I missed the board, and the board crushed my foot into the sand.
Oh.
And my mom, it was like a surf trip with my family, so my mom was like, don't do that. Don't skimboard ever.
And you were like, it's too late.
And I was like, Dad, look, I'm skimboarding. And I turned around because he wasn't looking. You know how dads don't look when right. I tell him to look. And I missed the board, and the board crushed my foot. And then my mom said I had to continue surfing, or I had to go home. We were like a family surf trip. So like,
it's like
you have to surf on your broken foot or you're going home. So for a week and a half, I surfed like on like a, my foot was like enormous.
She was doing like the cigarette thing. Yeah. Where it's just like,
yeah,
you know,
she gives you like a card.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
The whole pack.
Yeah, you want to surf?
How long did you have surgery? Were you in a boot?
I waited 4 weeks to go to the doctor or something like that.
You were lazy. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I get it from my parents, apparently. Wait, I went, and my foot, I couldn't wear a shoe, obviously. Foot's like,
you know, could you wear sandals?
I had one shoe and one sandal on.
That's a look.
Wow.
And so, yeah, the whole summer, I just kind of limped around.
When you went to UF, were you a huge Gator football fan?
Yep.
How do you feel about Steve Spurrier overall? Because not only is he like the biggest like player ever and the biggest winningest coach ever,
yeah,
but then he went obviously to the NFL and then back down to South Carolina, the hated Gamecocks.
Yeah. I mean, so when I was there, we had what's his name? I forget what his last, I think it was Ron. Was the coach.
Oh, the one who went to Illinois afterwards?
Yeah, the one who went to Illinois. And then it was between Urban Meyer and Steve.
Right.
And everybody's like, we need Steve back. Because, like, Steve had the only championship, so we need him.
Right.
And he went to the Gamecocks, and we got Urban Meyer, and everybody was super skeptical. But the second Urban Meyer came in, we started winning.
Right.
So, I mean, it wasn't any, like, bad blood thought, because... I mean, I wasn't a huge fan before I went, so I didn't have like the years of history. Like, my dad doesn't know how to throw a football. You can't play sports. But so it's just like sports weren't in my family like that.
Surfing was.
Yeah.
No, that's neither.
And how many national championships did you win when you went to Full Sail?
Exactly zero. No, they were talking about like having like an intramural football thing.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I don't know if you've ever seen the campus at Full Sail.
Mm-mm.
But most
I assumed
people,
it was on a boat.
Most of the people that go there in like the gaming community, because it's a lot of gaming programs and stuff like that.
So it is on a boat.
Yeah, might as well be.
Every semester at sea.
And so it's like 99% dudes who have been showered and like
have an Asian fetish. Yeah.
Were you the 1%?
Yeah, I mean, I showered a lot. But also, like, me and my friends just didn't hang out at the school that much. We just were trying to get in and get out.
Right.
But, yeah, it's a weird school.
So when you went there, when you made the switch to go to Full Sail,
yeah,
did you know that your focus would be in engineering?
I mean, I knew I was going to do audio engineering, but I didn't think I was going to do music.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do music. I didn't want to do something I like because I love music so much and it's all I ever like talked about ever. And I didn't want to hate it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to end up hating music. So I went there trying to work in game design for audio or for movies.
Whoa.
For like...
Like Foleying and...
Yeah, like Foley and sound design and all that.
And did you take those courses?
Yeah.
Whoa. How far did you work on any like student films? Did you...
I did, you know, like Unreal Engine. You know how they have like for game design?
Mm-hmm.
They have like a basic level in there that when you first download it, and I designed all the sounds for that and like the music and all that. And I did a couple of like movie trailers and redid, and I think there's a reel online, honestly.
Whoa.
Somewhere from way back in the day. And I had my teacher, Tom Todia, he set me up with the people at Sony, and we had talked about like me coming in and interning, which is like, I don't know if you know, like, games make so much money.
Mm-hmm.
So much more than movies and, like, music specifically.
Yeah.
Like, they just throw money at, like, anything. So, like, their internships are, like, $40 an hour.
Oh.
30 hours a week. And you probably have a job at the end of it. And you get a crazy bonus every time a game drops. And, like, you only do 2 games a year. And you really only work, like, 3 months out of the year. And
why did you not do that?
Is it because you want to stay up for 48 hours straight and sleep on the floor of a bus?
Yeah. That, I was like, shit, it's just too cushy for me. No, it just fell through. I like put all my eggs in that basket and was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to move to San Francisco or San Diego. There's like the two locations. And it just never worked out. They just stopped responding to my emails. I was talking to like their CFO or something, like somebody hella high on the food chain. And he just like stopped responding.
That's
dick.
Such a bummer.
I think I still have his business card that I got because he came to the school to speak as like motivation.
Yeah, you should email him now.
Yeah, I want you, because you were hanging out with the football team and bullying people. Why don't you give his name up right now? So that
I wish I remembered it. Oh.
Damn, that's a real burn.
I know.
Can't remember your name. Wait, what's the best Foley solution that you can think of?
I mean, the notorious one is like the hammer with the watermelon for like brain splatter and stuff like that. But, I mean, what happened when we were in school is the audio libraries got so big.
How big was it? Thank you.
So this is over.
Happy you came over.
Yeah, I gotta go. No, but there's like 150,000 sounds that they just had for the students. So all that Foley stuff, we did it, and then we were like, oh, our recordings just don't sound as good as the stuff that's free and available.
Right. It's sort of like, why even bother teaching kids math when they can just use a calculator?
Right.
You know? Math is so dumb.
Yeah. Math is so dumb.
Shout out to the Florida Public Education.
That was actually a banner in my high school.
What I just said?
Yeah, it said math is dumb.
Yeah.
So were you playing music back then as well?
Yeah. I've played guitar since I was 15. I've played piano since I was like 5, but I've always been terrible at that. Never really practiced.
When did you put the saxophone down?
When I was 14.
Okay.
it was 2 years. I was good.
Yeah?
If you handed me a saxophone, I wouldn't know what to do with it.
So you're playing guitar. What kind of bands were you in?
Like prog rock, experimental. Like,
wow. Were you in Yes?
I know, yeah.
No, I was just in shitty garage bands.
Did you?
It was a lot like me. It was a lot of like... And then we had, like, me and my brother, who he plays drums. We just did this Black Keys-esque thing. It was just the two of us.
Yeah. Did you actually play in garages?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Florida, that's all there is, garages and lawns.
So when I was in high school, I played in a garage band. But we mostly played in basements, right? Mm-hmm. Or, like, practiced in basements or whatever. But our friend Brian, who was the lead singer, we went over to his... parents' place, because it was usually at my place or at like two of the other guys in the band's places. But one time we went to Brian's and we actually played in his garage. It was freezing cold outside, and the garage is a garage, like a concrete slab on the floor and, you know, paint cans and whatever else in the garage. And we're in there, and so we plug all our shit in, and so I set up the drums, and Brian, for whatever reason, we figured out later, every time he touched the microphone, he got zapped because nothing was grounded. Yeah. Did that ever happen to you, or did anything fun happen in the garage, or ridiculous?
No.
Were your neighbors Florida. Understanding?
My neighbor, I mean, nobody's home in the middle of the day. They're all just, you know, at their jobs, and they come home at 5, and then they go into their houses and never come out. It's the suburbs, man. I think I talked to my neighbors twice.
Twice?
Ever. I talked to my, like, across the hall neighbor in my new apartment more than I talked to my neighbors in Florida.
Wow.
What'd you tell your new neighbor?
I just apologize for my friends. We were leaving the house, like, wasted one night the first time we met her, and my friend, like, talked to her for way too long.
You're playing in bands. You're doing Foley design, and you see a path towards engineering, not so much in music. When does that take a turn towards music?
So I moved to Atlanta because I was visiting the girl I was dating at the time, and she's telling me how good the scene is in Atlanta and how I should work there in music, and I was just kind of not trying to work in music. But I looked up all the television studios and sound and all that, because there's a lot of them there. So there's this studio, I can't remember the name now, whatever. There's a studio that does a bunch of sound design for television. I started and I walked into the front door. I called them up ahead and I walked up to the front door, just knocked it, and met the manager and sat with her for like 2 hours and just waited until an internship opened. I said I'd just wait until an internship opened. She was like, you just have one. And so I just started working there.
Atlanta's
the next
full
day.
Of possibilities.
Yeah, yeah. Really.
Well, I always tell everybody with internships, it's just, if you apply online, you're just waiting for them to get to your email when they're open.
Right.
Right.
But if you just go in person, you skip the entire line. because you're there and you're a face and they know you now. And they're going to think of you as a person and not a resume or anything like that. So
if you're looking for an intern, can people stop by your new apartment here in New York City?
Yeah, stop by my studio.
No, give out your home address.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Because your neighbor will be annoyed.
Yeah, because my neighbors. I'll tell you all about that after this. Because I have some really interesting neighbors.
Oh, man. But you walk into the studio, get an internship right away.
Yeah, and I just never left. Well, I left to go get my stuff, but I just lived on her. I lived in her apartment for like a month, and then I got a place in Atlanta where I lived for the next 6 years. And,
really?
That studio ended up shutting down, I think, 6 months after I had gotten there, and I kind of saw it coming. The clients were not there as much. I think they did Archer there.
Oh, that's cool.
And the dude who's mixing Archer moved to a different studio I think he built a big studio in his home, so he didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was taking the biggest room there. And when he left, I went and got an internship with Ben Allen. And
wait, when you were in that other studio that was doing Archer and everybody's leaving,
yeah,
did you see the writing on the wall then?
Oh, that's an amazing story, actually, because they didn't tell me. I mean, I saw the writing on the wall, but I was still showing up every day, and mm-hmm. there was less and less going on. And one day I showed up and all the lights were off, which is usually the managers are going to flip some of the lights on, and I'll flip the rest of them on, clean the whole studio, like set up every mic, test everything, all that. I think they had 11 rooms total. It was it was a big operation.
Yeah.
And I went in and I set everything up, and I'm there from 9 a.m. or 8 a.m. to 11:30, something like that, and nobody comes in. And I'm just waiting for people to show up.
It's an issue.
And so you finally leave, and there's a little boy crying. And you're just like, wait a minute.
Just like a tumbleweed just rolled. Yeah. But,
so did you think to yourself, like, there goes my opportunity here in Atlanta?
Yeah.
I did hear your Red Bull interview where you talk about just 2 hours of my life. No, it was amazing. And I thought you were great, but I wanted to know. So you did one Craigslist job where you were a dealer at... Right, for poker?
An underground poker game.
Yeah.
In Gainesville, when I was going to UF, my job was, like, I ran a game with a whole bunch of friends, and we created this whole, like, underground ring of, like, 7 days a week. There was a different game in every house, and it started off as, like, $10 a night, and then it got to, like, thousands of dollars.
Holy cow.
And, like, $20,000 on the table and stuff like that.
Whoa. Are you a good poker player?
I was.
Whoa.
That's how I paid for, like, I bought my first car that way.
Did your parents know?
Yeah. They hate it. Because, like, I mean, at first I wasn't good, so they saw, like, my bank account at first, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? But then I got good, and, like, I mean, there was a time when I, like, considered, I dropped out of school the first time because I was considering going, like, professional with it.
Whoa.
And the kid that I shadowed from my first day of high school is like the winningest or one of the winningest poker players there is.
Really?
And I guess he's the winningest Jeopardy person there is. Alex Jacob.
Whoa. Like, so
shouts to him.
Yeah. So I was like, look, he did it. I mean, yeah. He's clearly way smarter than me.
Well, Florida.
Well, so, yeah.
He's on World Series of Poker and all that.
He has like two bracelets or something like that.
Does he? I don't know what that means.
It's when you win, you get.
Okay, gotcha. Does he like wear like sunglasses when he plays? Or
I think so. He has like a big Jufro.
Well, you know, that's Alex Jacob.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I like went to middle school with him.
I was working two internships and doing that poker job at the same time. So I had income and I was doing all right, but that was what I wanted to do. And they literally right before that, because there was an empty room, just told me I could practice and was going to be the next assistant, and I was starting to get like options for like, oh, TNT LA needs this cartoon, like they need to all the sound effects replaced, just go in and replace those real quick. And so I thought that it was going to work out. I had like the third biggest room and I was an assistant, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then so that day I see like one single solitary office light on, and I go in, I talk to the manager. And I'm like, so where's this going, like, about this assistant job and this and that? Like, I really want to be the assistant here full time. And he's like, let me stop you. We're shutting down. Actually, we've already shut down. And why are you here? he told me that if he saw me earlier, he would have told me to go home earlier.
Damn.
And then I just like left that day.
Damn.
At 11:30 after spending like 3 hours cleaning the entire studio.
Oh. And so, okay, so you move on from there.
Yep.
Because you're forced to.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And. Can you, I remember in your Red Bull, interview, you talked about, your next situation
mm-hmm.
and, what you did to keep your job there, right?
With Ben?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was just like a crazy situation from the get-go because we started and it was 24 hours twice a week, basically. It started
it's
as...
like you're a doctor.
Or yeah. like a firefighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except you're just getting people lunch and dinner. Which I guess they could die if you didn't, like, enough times.
This is true. It's very true.
So it's
yeah.
the same.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. But it started off as 10.
By the way, thank you for your service. Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of songs that would never happen if CeeLo didn't get his lunch. Actually, that's true.
Might not yeah. happen. First of all, did you see CeeLo's new, his costume? His what he wore to the Grammys?
Yeah, when he dressed up as an Oscar to the Grammys.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. Honestly, I don't, like, people hated on it. I was like...
Well, I said he looked like an angry Ferrero Rocher.
Yeah. That's accurate. You know, you gotta reinvent yourself sometimes. Sometimes you just gotta, like, turn into a Bond villain.
Yeah. Wait, so we heard the craziest story about CeeLo recording, actually. Which is that he records while lying down, and you have to move the mic, like, basically into his mouth.
I never saw that.
Okay.
But, you know, maybe that's happened before. But the studio that we were in, it was kind of smaller. His room was didn't really have a couch for that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was just a...
Like, a space issue,
and he would have if he could have.
Mm-hmm.
But 24 hours a day.
That's what it ended up... It started off as 10 to 10... And I'd be in and out and then go do the poker thing and then wake up at 8 and go do the other job. And then it turned into like 24 hours and I'd wake up at, and then I wouldn't go to sleep and I would just go to the other job and then I would sleep in between.
When it's early on, like in that getting to be 24-hour process, what are the worst hours?
Like 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. are the worst because that's when you actually start to get tired.
Yeah.
'Cause after that, you just kind of zone out and you're just alive. Just sitting there watching music getting made. That when you start to get tired and you're just like, I want to go the fuck home. And your client's asking for Froyo or something like that. And you got to drive 35 minutes to go to like find the only Froyo place that's open at 2 a.m.
On zero sleep.
How much do you love watching movies on mute in the studio?
I watch a lot of sports on mute,
mm-hmm.
which is if I can,
mm-hmm.
because it's a lot better that way.
Yeah.
But... there's this one story about in the one time I went to Ye's house in LA where he put two movies on mute and then Thug had never seen them before and was asking about them. So I basically narrated There Will Be Blood and American Psycho with Thug. And I was like, oh, so here he's about to kill this dude.
Yeah.
But you don't know if it's real or not.
What's the milkshake line?
Yeah. I still
I would, yeah, I would yeah. drink your milkshake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's talking about milkshakes now.
Yeah. You're working these crazy hours. You're working in not rap music yet, but how would you describe it?
I mean, I was doing indie, like pop and indie rock. And then between CeeLo and Bangladesh in the other room, there's like the funk, pop, and rap world.
Right.
Occasionally.
So if you divide those two and you're saying like this alternative pop rock stuff and then you have like more funk hip hop stuff on the other side, where's the crossover in terms of like engineering and in what they need and in how things work?
Well, that like with when Bangladesh first started to come in more and more because he ended up buying the space from CeeLo and we were renting from CeeLo, and then so there's this, that's when it really flipped to the 24-hour schedule. And they brought in all their own stuff to wire up. And that was really the hardest part, was trying to figure out how to wire up as an intern this whole new setup with... He had... I don't know if you know anything about like the speakers and shit like that, but he had these giant PA speakers, these giant KV PAs on the production desk pointed at him with the huge subwoofer that comes with them behind him. So he's maybe 4 feet from these huge. And then we had his whole setup wired into the other setup, like because the patch cables were on the other side of the production desk. So we just patched him in from the front to the back and then built, got him a whole new like monitor setup and like a mixer. And so he just went in from that and his MPC, because he's always on like an MPC 2000. Into Pro Tools rig, which is in the front, and that was the hardest part. Other than that, like with him, it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of drum miking or anything else. It's just a vocal mic. But when you're an intern or assistant with like Rock, it's a lot about miking and testing and showing up at 6 a.m. and making sure everything's working, because if one mic's not working or if one thing's not working in the chain, you have to suss the whole thing out start to finish.
Well, how about like when it comes to like rappers' preferred microphones, like warmer tones or like harder things, like what do you bring your own, or is it like, are people particular?
I'll only work in the spaces that have like a certain amount of options now, because a lot of places I go to will have one really good mic, but it's not, it's a situational kind of thing. Like instead of having a U87, which kind of works across the board, it might not be the best mic, but it'll get the job done almost all the time. It's like a workhorse mic. They might have a C800, which only works on like some people. And like, I used to hate it on Thug's voice. Like, he used to love it because it's an expensive mic and it looks dope. And it really looks, it's crisp right away and it sounds a certain way right away. But it really left me wanting to be able to do more to his voice than I was able to do. So a lot of studios, I'll go in and they'll be like, this is our mic. And I'll just be like, this is terrible. And that happened a lot on the road, which is why I started to mix on my headphones and laptop and all that, because all the studios were different. They all sounded different. They all had this equipment that I wasn't really fond of. So I'd record on their equipment and immediately just take it off that computer and put it on my laptop and like eighth inch into their system and do it that way.
So talk about the first time that you did meet Thug.
First time I met him, I didn't meet him, I guess. First time I met him, I was starting to work on more paid sessions, but I had been working the whole summer with Metro and Southside and Spins and Sunny and TM and all them.
Oh, wait. Yeah, real quick, before we get to that, you had a situation where it was a big space, right? And those guys would just have their little setups in the big space, right?
Yeah.
And it was going at all hours, and you were the guy.
Yeah, I was the only person. I mean, I had 5 interns at a time, I think, something like that. 5 interns a week. So they were always in the studio too, and they helped a lot. But as far as like wiring stuff up and being able to problem solve and any of the tech issues, they really couldn't do that. So I was just around all the time. And every producer had their own fold-out table that we set up for them with the, like, Sonny really brings his whole, or brought his whole PC with him every time, with this huge like 27-inch, 30-inch screen or whatever. His tower, his interface.
Who's carrying all that in?
He would back in the day, and then, you know, we would help.
So we have a rotating cast of doormen downstairs in our building, and one of them is the son of the, or I guess a couple of them are the sons of the super, right?
Okay.
The youngest of those sons, he lives, you know, in the other building, and he will bring out his giant monitor, his CPU and everything, and play games while he sits at the front desk. But he takes, you know, wheels the whole thing out, sets the thing up on the front desk, and we'll play like Sunny Digital would, you know.
Yeah. Produce.
Yeah, I guess we all have a Sunny Digital in our lives. yours is Sunny Digital. Ours is our doorman son.
Yeah, pretty much the exact same, I guess. So there'd be the one table for Sunny, then the one for Spins, and the one for Metro, and then we'd have a little switcher for all 3 of the setups, and they would just go back and forth producing and like collaborating, and then an artist would come in and I'd like squeeze my way through and sit in between like the 3 tables at the desk and just record and on whatever they had and send it back to them. And
that's unbelievable.
Is that an intimidating situation for you?
No. I mean, that's like, DJing was intimidating. Right. Engineering, I'm like never worried, except for, I was in a session and like Andre 3000 walked in. Now I'm nervous. Or like Busta Rhymes is in a session one time. I'm nervous as fuck. Like, because they've seen it all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They know exactly, and they know engineering as well as I do. They might not be able to do it, but they know it. They know when I'm fucking up.
Right.
So like if I'm fucking up, they're like, why don't you try this? My engineer used to do that, and that's nerve-wracking.
So how much of it for you is just being ahead of whatever they're going to say?
It used to be a lot more, and I always tell everybody that's just starting out is you should have a template that gives you every possible option and test every possible option. When I first started, my first paid engineering session was just a production session with Kenneth Whalum. And he just wanted to bring in a keyboard and his laptop and his Logic rig and wire into our speaker so he could hear it. But I, knowing he's like a amazing sax player and could play every type of instrument, I set up a drum set fully mic'd. I set up a vocal booth. I set up a booth for him to like play sax if he wanted to. Just like played music with each of them, made sure that they were kind of in the ballpark and set it up. And the first thing he did when he saw all that was like, let's start recording on here. And
that's awesome.
That was like the moment where I kind of realized, as long as you're, nobody cares if you're good when they meet you. They don't think you're good. They don't want you to prove that to them. They want you to show up and get everything done and there to be no hiccups from point A to point B. Now, when like, now for me, people come in and they're like, oh, let's see if you can mix this for us real quick. Or we want to record these vocals because that's what they know that that's what I do. So they're always coming for that. They're not going to come to me and be like, let's record some violin.
Right.
I mean, they might, but they really don't more often than not. But I could.
So. Yeah. So the first time Thug walks in.
Oh, first time he walks in, he's in the B room, which is the second biggest room in the studio. I guess that's pretty obvious. In the studio. And I'm in A, finally getting some paid sessions with, I think, T.I. or... It might have just been the Hustle Gang whole time when we were doing Get Do or Die 2.
Mm-hmm.
So they had, I think they had the A, the C, and the D room booked, and they were working in all three, and I was assisting in A and working in B. And Metro just comes in, and he's like, he's kicked out all of your assistants, and he's kicked out the engineer I brought. Can you please record him? Like, let your assistant record in this room. This dude's easy. He's just punching full verses at a time, but no one can keep up. And I'm like, I'm finally getting paid. Get out of the room. I need money. And so I'm like, obviously I'm going to do it. So we switched. I went into the other room and he was already in the booth. He records with the lights off. The blinds were closed. And the beat starts playing and he just goes off. And I kept up, obviously, because I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
You'd be dead.
Yeah.
Right.
I would have just, yeah, they actually sacrifice engineers as part of the ritual. That's
right.
Why the music's so good.
That's why he's the goat.
Yeah.
But that song is Some More. And he walks out before I see him, because I recorded headphones on and I'm mixing and I have like the music blasting and I'm just like kind of in the zone or whatever. And I turn around and Metro and Sonny come back because they went to American Deli to go pick up some food. Not even to order. They like ordered it, or had the intern order it. They went and picked it up because they wanted to get out of the studio for a minute, and they came back, it's four blocks away. 10 minutes tops. He's finished with the song. I'm like, yo, where the fuck did he go? I'm like, oh, he finished the song and he left. And like, we just walked out. And I play the song and then, you know.
The legend of Young Thug begins.
Yeah. I think I saw him the third time we worked together. I actually thought he was someone else. I had heard his music, but I didn't really go on YouTube and have the time to go like look everybody up.
Sure.
But I had heard his music. I listened to it on the radio. I listened to like Two Cup stuff and stuff like that.
So what do you think it was about your studio situation then that led so many upcoming and legitimate artists to be there?
The studio manager, Chris, and the owners were trying to start a label, and they had an artist, and Chris had a relationship with Metro and Sonny, and he had known them ahead of time, and he told them that, like, bring these producers in, let them use the space, get beats from them for your artists, like, let's create this, like, space for this all to work out, and when they came in, they did that, but they also were constantly working because they were kids. They were 18. I think Metro, when I met him, was 18. He had to be, I guess he was 19 because we did 19 in Boomin. So, and he was the youngest one. He was like a baby. You know what I mean? And I always tell him, like, every time I just saw him the other weekend, I was like, you're like an adult now. It's fucking crazy. Because I'll see him like once every 3 months, and she's like, he's more and more like, and you can see obviously in the way he's built his career and all that, but like, he's just like acting more like an adult every time he was crazy.
Was Young Thug the most difficult person? Was he even difficult to work with?
He's just quick. Like, and you can't, it's kind of like a fine-tuned, like, automobile in that everything works really great until you fuck it up, and then it's over. Because if you fuck up his flow,
mm-hmm.
and you're too slow or whatever, he's, like, stream of consciousness. You have to be, like, he did a line, all right, fly it down, hit record again before he can think to be like, let's fucking go.
Right.
Because the second he's like, let's fucking go, he's not thinking as much, so it's like you're off a take, and then you have to go back and, like, get him back in the zone. I just never really interrupted that process.
Have you ever worried about you yourself getting fired by him?
Mm-mm.
Can you talk about the Rich Gang stuff?
Yeah.
How did that develop, and did you know it was going to be what it was at the end? Like, what we hear today, did you know it was going to end up like that?
So it started off, I think, 3 months before it actually started. Bird came in for the first time, and he was just checking out the studio, and Thug told him about the studio. I think it was like March 2014, something like that. So he came in, but it was more of a party atmosphere. I think we did like 2 songs. We did that Migos Thug freestyle song that's like all 4 of them on the track, but that came out without being mixed. Like, that's like what happened that day. It's like super, there's like a crazy amount of delays and shit in there. It's just way too much. And that's just what I was doing at the time to help people feel comfortable when they're recording, especially like dudes who are like in, like, rely on feeling the beat more.
Mm-hmm.
The 8th delay will like keep them on beat and like keep them more in the zone, especially because they'll hear their voice and they'll hear it again and they'll come in after. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just helps with their flow, especially for people who like work based off flow a lot more than anything else.
Rather than put it in afterwards.
Yeah. So that was that song. And I think we did Hookah as well
mm-hmm.
that day. And then like Justin Bieber came in and Jermaine Dupri and like 85 million other people, and turned into a party. And I just thought that was it. I thought it was just like, this is that one time thing. And it just went back to normal for 3 months. Thug would come in every so often. Every other tip booked the studio a lot of other people. But it just kind of went back to equilibrium after that. And then I want to say like June or May, Bird comes back in for one day. He was like, I remember not liking this studio that much. I was like, you were in the bad room. So we went to the B room, which is like the room that me and Thug liked a lot. And I was like, let's work in this room. I know it's smaller, but the vibe is better. We're going to get more work done. I was like, you can hang in the other room, whatever. Me and Thug did one song, and I played it for him. And I think it was 2-3 a.m. at the time. And he had me call the studio manager and have her come up to the studio. And he asked her if he could book all 4 rooms for 90 days straight. And she was like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
So after that, it was just full on. I think the first week we did 75 songs, just me and Thug. And Quan had the other room with Justin Childs, yeah, the engineer, and the two of us did all the Rich Gang stuff.
Hey guys, just wanted to take a little break from the conversation to remind you that this Thursday, we're headlining SOBs here in New York City, and the time to get your tickets is right now. Even though it's going to be unseasonably warm, would you say, Jeff?
It was going to be 70 degrees and sunny.
70 in February. Don't get left out in the cold. We're on the verge of a sellout, and we want you in the building with us. So let's all celebrate together at your girls' tour, SOBs, here in New York City in just 2 days. Get your tickets right now at itsthereal.com before they sell out. Back to Alex Chumet. So it was planned to be those guys together. It wasn't like Quan was doing his own thing and Thug was doing his own
thing. No, the plan was the two of them, and then we brought in more. Like, there's Pee Wee Long is on there a little mm-hmm, bit. There's mm-hmm. a few other artists, but they came in more towards the end, and Thug and Quan had already done, you know, a few hundred songs.
And at what point did, and how did it happen that Birdman would do all of those?
Yeah, like the ad-libs Rich
and,
Gang.
Yeah.
Rich Girl.
I didn't do, I mean, his engineer did those additions afterwards when we were printing them all down. Because I added him in a few songs, but he was always like, more. And I was like, I don't want. But I mean, I get it, because they definitely like branded the whole project.
Mm-hmm.
And you needed him.
Yeah.
Especially because he was doing mostly ad-libs, and he did a couple of verses, but he did mostly like just talk shit on the in the background, which is like some of my favorite parts, especially on like some of the leaks and the shit that came out. But like freestyle, he's talking in the background the whole time, and it makes the whole track so much better.
How easy is it to have a conversation with Birdman?
He's nice. He's like one of the nicest people I ever worked with. Because I was working so many hours, I would show up. I was running the studio. I wasn't just the engineer. I always used to tell them that. I'm like, I don't show up at 7 p.m. when you show up. I show up at 11 a.m. and I sit there and I get the studio ready and I talk to the interns and like whatever other sessions are going on in the day, or I'm mixing for you or whatever it is. And then they had the studio booked from 4 p.m. to 4 a.m. or whatever. And it would normally end up being like 7 to 7 instead.
Mm-hmm.
But after we would leave at 7, I would go home for 3 hours and then just come back right after. And so one session, I just couldn't stay up anymore. And I hit play on the song, and I just put my head down and fell asleep. And I remember, because some dude like hit me, somebody in the background, somebody was like, yo, wake up. And Bert was like, let him sleep. He's fucking tired. And I woke up, and I was like, thanks, man. And I fell back. I hit play on another song. I fell back asleep. And I woke up the next morning like at the studio and just like got back to work.
But my God.
I got some sleep. That was awesome.
What artists prefer to record during the day? Because like we know some. Bun B is like, I'm an adult. Mm-hmm. I have a wife to go home to. I'd like to record during business hours.
Right. Nicki Minaj is the same thing.
Do you find any that are like, hey, I want to show up at 10 a.m. and get started?
Not from Atlanta. That's not an Atlanta thing. Because Atlanta, a lot of like, I mean, it's an intertwined culture, like the clubs and the strip clubs and the nightlife is part of the rap culture. And so they'll start at 7, go until 1, go to the club, come back at 3 or 4, tell me how the song played at the club, and then keep working.
Do you ever go to the strip club and all those places? Or because, I mean, having listened to the first hour of this podcast, you know, you're always working. So, like, do you ever find time to hang out with everybody outside of the studio? Or do you even have desire to?
Well, when it comes to, like, the strip clubs and stuff like that, when they would go, I would go to the clubs sometimes. But a lot of times, it's not my scene. Everybody got so much money to throw. I don't got all that money. Like, it doesn't feel good to be, like, the only guy not making it rain.
Right.
I got, like, $8 of change in my pocket.
Yeah, but that's a, you know, if put you, it if into you a get small it down to enough pennies. Yeah.
Well, it's more impactful at least. Yeah. Like, they're gonna notice it.
Literally impactful.
Yeah.
Impact.
Yeah.
But and then a lot of times what I would do instead is I would be like, oh no, I'm gonna sit here and work, and I know they'd be gone for 2 hours, so I would just go to the bar with my friends. I would just meet my friends at the bar for like an hour.
And that's where you make it rain with your $8 and 67 cents.
Yeah.
When does American Deli close? That's what,
American, you want, is that an actual answer?
Yeah.
At 8 p.m. 8 or 10, depending on the American Deli.
What is the most instantaneous hit that they've gone out with to the club and been like, oh, well, this is it?
Danny Glover. Danny Glover was the most instantaneous moment ever in my career. It was just me and Thug in the room. He was working with Metro. He couldn't find a beat he liked. We had already done 5 or 6 Metro songs that day. And Southside was in the C room cooking up a beat, and I walked out and I heard like the beginnings of it, the synth line. And I was like, yo, please finish that. Like, finish it now. And he's like, why? I'm like, Thug wants a beat, and I don't want to be sitting here without any beats. And it wasn't at the time when I was bringing beats to him, you know? And calling like Southside Metro and be like, yo, can you just send me a pack, please? And I'll just go through them. So I was just like, please give me this beat. I was like, he'll love it. I know it. So I just grabbed it, went in and played it. Thug said, pull it up. Went in the booth. 5 minutes later, came out, and the song was done. And then I went out and got everybody. I was like, please come listen to this. I got everybody.
Yeah.
I got my interns. I got my assistants. I got the managers. I got all the producers that were there, all their friends. I was like, Jig, everybody. I was like, please come in this room and listen to this right now. There's video of it. This video of that moment, I forget, it's like a World Star video. It's like Thug strapped up in his own hood. It's old. But like part of it, he comes in, he's like playing pool, and then I play Danny Glover, and the room's full of people, and everybody's just like kind of like, just like, this is fucking insane.
How terrible is it normally to deal with an entourage and everybody who just wants to hang out during a session?
I like everybody. We really? Always joke. Like, I'm quiet at first, but I still talk to all his, like, family and shit every so often. Like,
but it doesn't bother you in terms of, like, trying, you know, relaying something to you to get done, or...
I just put my headphones on.
No.
But, like, drinks on the console.
I'm just like that. Oh, that's me. I had a client recently that would just move my drink away from the console because they were like, why would you? I'm like, it's not going to fall over. I've seen way worse. They used to put their drinks on the sideways part, on like the angled part of the console, and it would just, like, the lean would spill over into the CO1B, and I'd just be looking, I'd be like, no.
Was there ever a session that either... that didn't go right for any number of reasons, but ended up where it was just like, oh, that was so good, but we lost the whole thing?
I always had backups. Like, in the middle of a session, I would back up to another drive. Mm. I would just be like, guys, you gotta wait, sorry. Mm-hmm. And they'd get mad, but I always... because one time I lost half a song.
Oh.
We redid it because it was just the hook or something like that, and so we knew. But
what song was that? Do you know?
No, I can't remember. But the computer crashed, and I, even though I had hit save, I think the drive was maxed out or something like that, and then it crashed because obviously the drive's maxed out and it can't, like, you can't spin and hold all that information at the same time. So it just, like, everything went down, and I was like, so I just moved it to the desktop, did finish the song, and then, like, had my intern go get another drive and start it over.
So you've been to Kanye's house. Mm-hmm. What other houses have you been to?
I think French Montana's. No, it's we went to Sean Kingston's house on Rodeo Tour.
Was he a good host?
Yeah, he had a nice house. He has a nice studio in his house. Really dope. That was in L.A. Who else? I can't really remember right now.
Does anyone want to record?
Oh, Weekend. We went to the Weekend's place in Toronto.
Hmm. Wow.
So do people want to record in, like, seemingly odd rooms? Like, just because they're like, I like the sound in here.
I don't think anybody thinks about the sound of a room, mm-hmm. but you definitely think about how far they have to walk. Like, I know Travis likes to record in the room with you so that he could tell you what he likes about it while he's in there, and there's a lot more of a connection so that he doesn't have to relay stuff just verbally.
Mm-hmm. Does he mind any bleeding, or?
He does, but, I mean, the everything's muted.
Okay.
But, I mean, Kanye works in the room. Doug works in the room sometimes, but he really likes to be, he really likes people not to hear him until it's done.
Hmm.
Who else? Quan worked in the room a few times, but didn't really like it. We set up like a mic where he could sit down. So I think it was like 7 a.m. We were all exhausted. So we just set it up in the room so he could, like, just finish a song. I forget what song that was. I know it made the tape, so I should know it.
And no situations where it's been like, when Kanye and them went down to Mexico and they had, like, the doors open to the sand and just set up a microphone right there. Yeah. No situations like that, or?
I mean, I've had them, and I've had them a lot in the mix. Like, on Savage Mode, you could hear a kid in the background on one of the songs.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity. It was in the ad-lib, so I could have taken it out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like an homage to the, was it the fire alarm that goes off in one of his old songs?
Mm-hmm.
That people just, like, thought was hilarious. So I just left it. I mean, it the song has such a vibe to it that it kind of fits. It sounds like an effect, but it's definitely not. It's definitely kids talking in the background.
How do you choose an intern?
I have a notebook with 90 questions in it. And there's, like, a few sprinkled in there that are, like, if you don't answer this right, I'm not hiring you. And I don't really hire producers or people that want to be artists, because I tried to give people chances, and I've had some of the craziest situations from trusting a person that has an ulterior motive. Like, to be an intern at a studio, you should want to be an engineer,
right?
That should be it. That should be your beginning end goal.
I want to be an intern so I can hand out my mixtape.
Yeah. And I will break it in front of you, and I'll break it in front of the intern and in front of the artist, just to let the artist know that we do not co-sign that.
Yeah. But you want to know what? Then the rapper will never forget you.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I'm surprised no diss songs have been made about me, because I have fired a lot of interns. I should, my phone is, it says intern, like, all my interns, I label them as intern first so I could find
them.
Wow. So I could find
them. Put them in their place.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's just, otherwise, how am I going to, there's so many, I think I have 110 10 numbers or something.
Is there like intern 109?
No, I mean their names are in there after intern.
No, it's not like
but yeah. But in
hello
there,
five
in brackets I would put quit, fired, etc. because I didn't want to delete their number and then
right.
them call me and be like, got you, motherfucker.
Yeah. Do you pick up phone calls from numbers you don't know?
Oh, if they call twice.
Then you know it's important.
Then I know it's important and it's somebody I know, because if it's not, they usually don't call back, or they'll text to be like, hey, this is this person.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it used to be, especially when I was living in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
it used to be rappers that I might not have wanted to pick up the phone for at the
sure.
time.
Yeah.
Like I was waiting for like a paycheck or something like that, so I'm trying to hold on to the music and not answer the phone. And they'd call and I'd be like, hey, what's up? And they're like, we're coming to the studio. And it's like, yeah, how much, you can't really say no that many times, so.
I'd really hate for, like, you know, you to get two phone calls in a row and it's just like, you want a free cruise.
Yeah. That's happened.
You don't pick up phone calls.
I don't. I figure if they leave a message, it's
yeah.
important. That's it.
I pick up.
Yeah.
I talk to anybody. And then even if it's a missed call and, like, it's a wrong number, I call them back and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, it's the wrong number. I'm like, you called me.
We are talking right now.
Yeah.
How is your day going? You tell me about it.
What's the most
That's
unexpected?
How I met Eric.
Right. Our mom was just like, here's his phone number. What is the most unexpected phone call you've gotten?
Tip called me once to ask me to mix a song, and it was late as fuck, and I was not used to somebody like him calling me, and I was out. I was like out. It was like 2:30. The bars are closing out. Like,
oh.
I had been through a long night already of drinking, and I was like, yeah, totally, man, like, just like wasted talking to Tip on the phone.
Did he call you shorty?
No, he did lecture me once though, which is that was like
about what.
So I like, I'm an asshole, so it's my fault, but like, he was in the session and I was helping him out, and I was the engineer had showed up and he was talking about like how I did a good job or whatever. I was like, cool, thank you. And I thought he had stopped talking to me. Why would you continue to talk to me? There's like a room full of people and like all his homies and shit. And I was like, all right, he's done talking to me. I'm just going to go back. And I'm like working and I'm kind of not paying attention. I look at my phone and he looks at me and he's like, yo, I'm talking to you right now. He like continued what he was saying and I just thought it was over. So I just kind of zoned out and went back into my little like engineer nerd zone. And he went in on me. He wasn't like yelling,
right?
But he just like, because you know, he like, he's a preacher, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really think that one day he's gonna end up in politics or something like that, because he can really like captivate a room. I've seen it. He used to like have all his events and stuff for all the like mixtape releases or album releases at all the listening parties at the studio. And at every single one, he would do like a speech, and every single time, everybody was silent and just like staring in awe.
My favorite story of yours, which you might have told on the Red Bull thing, I'm not sure. You mixed a song in an Uber.
Yeah. I finished mixing Jeffrey, the entirety of Jeffrey, in an Uber.
That's amazing.
Was it a long ride?
It's like a 45-minute thing.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was just like sitting at the curb while you were finishing.
No. I mean, I would have loved that,
yeah.
but I didn't have time anyway. I had been working all night in my hotel room because Jeffrey was due, and I was just sitting. It was the same, because you know they said they were releasing the song with Wyclef
mm-hmm.
at like 4 a.m., but they sent it to me at 4 a.m. So I was like, this isn't going to happen, guys. So I was like mixing it on my bed, and like people on Twitter like screaming at me. Because like, I posted a picture like mixing the song that y'all are waiting for.
Yeah.
Got
yeah.
you guys.
Oh, it's your fault.
And some guy was like, fuck you. It's going to sound terrible. You're on your bed. Fuck you, you piece of shit. Like,
what does he know about audio design?
I was like, first of all, this is how I do everything.
Yeah.
Second of all, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, and it's funny because before every Thug release, all of his fans turn on me until it comes out. They're all like, fuck you, like, this is all your fault, it's gonna sound terrible, I bet it's garbage. And then like it comes out and they're like, thank you. That's what I did like last with Jeffrey. I was like, I'll cut my pinky off, and I really would have done it. If like people really hated it, I would have done it.
What do you mean you would have done it?
I mean I knew people wouldn't hate it. But like
if you cut your finger off.
No, if they I was like, this is a really good project.
Yeah.
They're not gonna hate this. So I said that. But if they did, I mean, if that was that wrong.
I mean, to be honest, what do you even need your pinky for, right?
Yeah,
right.
I was just gonna do it on the right hand. I'm left-handed, so.
Oh, so perfect.
So when you have a deadline in the middle of the night like that, or in the morning, or you're working with like a very short deadline, this is something we've heard before, like go to mixing and you have this crazy deadline to work with. What about the mastering guy? Like, they come after you, right?
Yeah, so, mastering dudes
Do they have the same pressure?
They have the pressure, but like the guy I use is very scheduled. Like, he's like, if you want him to like go out of his, he's got a family and kids. And
yeah.
But you have to schedule ahead of time, which is why my deadline's so crazy.
Gotcha.
But once it's there, it's over.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Once it goes to mastering, it's over. And honestly, with Jeffrey, it was the only time that once it went to mastering, it wasn't over, because they got the masters back and Doug listened to him, and there was too much time. There was just too much time between the release and when I got it done that he had all these notes. And that's why it was the last minute, because the night before I got 4 pages. Like, guess what? You got to change a whole bunch of shit.
Wow. So and then send it back to the mastering guy after that.
And then send it back. And I sent it to Thug at like 10 a.m. or something like that, and mastering at noon. And then they had it. This is the day Jeffrey came out. This is the 25th.
Wow.
Mastering had it done by 4 p.m. or something like that. And then we had to send it to iTunes, who they fucked up the release. And that's why there's like 4 different versions of one song on there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was done. So it's not my fault.
At what point did you figure out that you were in demand more than you even anticipated?
See.
Or do you feel like you are in demand?
I mean, I feel like I am. And I'm getting a lot more work now. But I kind of thought it would be more, I guess,
mm-hmm.
in a weird way. Like, I'm fighting, but the problem is I'm fighting up against dudes who are way more established, who have done way more records, who are way more familiar with the people on the labels. I don't know anybody on labels, really. I know a lot of, I'm starting to meet a lot of A&Rs because I'm here.
Right.
But in Atlanta, you don't really meet a lot of them. And I'm way more on the artist side of it than I am on
the
business
side. Yeah.
And I really don't know a lot of those people. So my name doesn't come up right away for a lot of people, unless they are younger and on the internet and they see like my presence. But a lot of the older dudes in like the labels, they don't give a shit about me.
Well, just wait 30 years.
Yeah. Just gonna, you know, I'll be 50 and deaf. And
yeah, but well, it
wasn't. But it wasn't like being flown somewhere, or it wasn't like being recognized in some certain way. For your work?
I just started getting flown places recently. I got flown to LA for some meetings, for some production stuff, potentially, which I think I might be doing, I hope, because that'd be really... It'd be a good step forward, because I can produce, and I have done that.
Is that for the new Star Wars?
I wish. I'd quit. You guys quit, delete all my social networks. Just... live at whatever, was it Star Wars Celebration or whatever? I just live at that.
Is that at Disneyland?
Yeah. It's like their Comic-Con.
Yeah. There was this whole time where, like, rock bands would reach out to, like, Timbaland, or would reach out to, like, the Neptunes, or, like, super producers, because they wanted that sound, but mm-hmm. related through a rock song or album or whatever. Do you find that's the same? Because you are pretty synonymous with a certain type of Atlanta rap.
Yeah.
Do you find that... beyond rap, rock bands or other types of genres reach out to you because they're like, we want that. We want you to push the limits on these vocals.
Right. Has Fall Out Boy reached out and been like, I want to sound like 21 Savage?
Right. No, honestly.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yep. I will pay my own way. Let's do this. So, like, if they're out there listening,
yeah,
just give me a call. Actually... the last trip I went on was with a whole label, and they wanted me to meet all their artists and stuff. Mm. And one of the artists they worked with is an electronic artist, and I did a song for her, and it came out really dope and different. And like, that is kind of where I've been wanting to go, is out, and not even just away from rap, but just different types of everything and different types of roles and more creative direction and more kind of away from just Alex is a mixer. Alex will mix this and make it sound good,
mm-hmm.
because I can, but that's only like a small portion of what I was doing in Atlanta anyway, because I was finding a lot of these beats. I was finding a lot of these young producers. I was giving them a shot, because a lot of these rappers will not work with them because they haven't heard of them. Even if the beat's good, they want to work with their friends they came up with. Like, Thug would prefer at one point to only work on Metro, Southside, Sunny, TM. And if he didn't recognize the name, he'd be like, who, why? But I'd be like, listen, bro, this is going to be good. This is dope. Like Goose and Isaac and Ricky and all the, a lot of dudes that have a lot more, and Wheezy have a lot more of a role now. You have to, they like, cosigns are so important in Atlanta. And I would find their beats and be like, okay, give me this one, this one, this one, and this one. This reminds me of this, but it's different. Or this will be like this, and it'll take him in a new direction. Like, all the Goose beats that are super pop oriented and they're like sample driven, like 1984 is on there and stuff like that. All that, just he would have never heard if I didn't be like, if I wasn't like, you have to get on this, you have to. Because at first I would play him, he'd be like, why? And that's, I'm trying to impose that on like the people I work with, is like, I did, like, that happened because of me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to be, and I don't like saying that in a meeting, because because one thing I noticed is people who claim a lot in the industry are over exaggerating.
Yeah.
So I'm always kind of like pull back. I'm like, I could do that, I guess, you know, and that doesn't work. So I've started to be more.
Well, so then is a next logical step for you to A&R someone's project?
I think that's hopefully, yes. Hopefully I want to executive produce and put a project together and produce and be part of like the sonic creation more than even just A&Ring, which is, I want to like do both, I mm-hmm. guess. And then still record and mix and master. Yeah.
So you're coming for Sycamore's job. We get it.
Sycamore's my idol, man. Like, he gave me so many chances back in the day too, because he vouched me a lot, because when I was started on Rodeo and stuff, I was supposed to mix it originally, and he would like be like, this is the next Rick Rubin. That's what you tell people.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a reputation, but he met me working on...
Did you have a beard?
Yeah, I actually looked hella raggedy when we were
You were the
Rodeo.
Next Rick Rubin.
Yeah, yeah, that's all it took.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like, oh yeah, you look like you haven't been outside in years. But I met him working on the Little Dirk album, Remember Me, and I was bringing beats. I was sitting in the room all the time. We were talking a lot, and he's like, oh, you have a lot of good ideas. And then he saw that I did Days Before Rodeo. I was like, you have to come in on this project. You have to. And so I was pegged to mix it, but obviously Mike Dean accepts. Yeah, fuck me. I would do the same thing.
I saw that when you moved to New York, you didn't raise your rates from Atlanta.
No. I mean, I raised my recording rates
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to record that much. And also, like, my recording rates were not sustainable. I might as well just have kept my car and been an Uber driver. But my mixing rates were exactly the same.
What was your thinking behind that?
Well, for indies especially, like, I noticed back in the day, my rates have been almost exactly the same since, like, 2013. As far as mixing goes, and people complain a lot. Like I out them a lot, because this is a professional sound. It really is. I spent years to get to just this point, and I didn't want to raise my rates because I want to be accessible to people. And I know it's not cheap, but it's worth it. And a lot of people have, everybody I've worked with who's done a mix has been like, this is completely different than what I got. And my rates are sustained. Like, I can sustain a living off of them, and I'm not trying to be rich. I'm not trying to, I mean, it'd be great to be rich, but like,
you want
to
be in Rich Gang.
Yeah. I want a chain. Actually, like, if I end up doing the tour part two or whatever that's coming out, that's my price. It's a chain.
Wait a minute. Is tour two coming out?
Well, it's Rich Gang two.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like,
are all parties involved?
I think it's just Thug and Bird. I've only heard what everybody else has heard.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to talk to Thug the other day, but he's overseas, so it's like hard to get it, like, a handle on it. But I don't know. I think that was about something else anyway.
What were your thoughts when you saw the Young Thug video that did not exactly go as planned?
For Wyclef.
Right. So that day, apparently, is the day that his... Instagram got hacked,
right?
And you hacked his Instagram,
and it was all my fault. No, because I was talking to him like the day before, and he was in a good mood and stuff, and that would send me. I wouldn't do shit either if that happened to me. Fuck that. I wouldn't have done anything. I'd have been like, there wouldn't have been enough money in the world to get me to do anything. I would just been mad. And he was way more composed than I was, because I had been like death threatening the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like, you're all gonna die.
I'm gonna cut off my pinky. Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. So I mean, I understand his point of view, but I also understand, like, they made what they could from it, and it turned out dope. What I don't understand is that, like, the director just kept lambasting Thug online for weeks. I was like, you got famous off of it, and, like, it's really, it came out dope. You did a really great job. Everybody's calling you now, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, just let it go.
Yeah.
It was, it turned out, that's who it turned out amazingly for, and I was like, I was going to say something online, but I guess I just said it now, so. But, I mean, like, exclusive. He did a great job. Yeah. he did a great job. I just don't understand it. It just kind of like, seemed, like, petty.
Right.
To an extent that, I mean, you made your money. You got a lot of publicity for it. It's probably one of the more important videos that have come out in a really long time. Like, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Taking so chill. That, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, relax.
You said that you get a lot of phone calls from rappers at weird hours.
Yeah.
Do you also get FaceTimes from rappers?
That's all they do. Yeah. By phone calls, I mean FaceTimes.
Yeah. Which I find the most... I find FaceTime so intrusive.
I hate FaceTime. Because... First of all, my entire life is a disaster. I don't really show my house or my apartment to anybody. Because, like, it's always, like, I'll clean it. And then 5 minutes later, it'll just be like, shh, crap. Everywhere.
But that's your dog's fault.
Yeah. He's just fucking the couch. Yeah. And destroying my clothes. And
destroying your life.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I got a FaceTime at, like... 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and I was just like, why? Like, that's just rude.
Well, but, like, I'll be in bed sometimes or out, and like, if it's a FaceTime, I'll normally like let it ring, let it go, and then FaceTime right back outside. I always have headphones with me so I can do that.
I mean, we heard from someone who said that she only FaceTimes because it's just an easy. Like, app, she's not even, like, looking at the phone. It's just sort of, like...
They look...
Out and about.
And they don't... A lot of times with Metro, because he FaceTimes me the most, it's work stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He has my template. He works off my system so that he can send me stuff easier and that I could troubleshoot easier. So, like, he was in French Montana's house in L.A. working on, like, a project or something like that recently and FaceTime me, and I literally just, like, wired the whole thing. Like, I just ran through, like, wiring and every troubleshooting aspect. We're downloading firmware updates, all that stuff, like, over FaceTime.
That's the best part of FaceTime, yeah. Like, you know.
But sometimes I'm in bed, and I'm just like, I can't pick up right now. Like, get up, get dressed, go to the living room, turn my lights on like I wasn't fucking asleep, and then FaceTime him back and be like, yo, what's up, man? How's it going? I'm definitely awake.
Right. You're FaceTiming with Metro and French Montana. We FaceTime with like our mom when she's just like, why doesn't my email show up?
My parents FaceTime me for Valentine's Day, and I was like, don't you guys fucking love each other? What are you doing, man? Why are you calling me? Like, me and my brother hanging out yesterday because we're both alone, and they FaceTime me, and they're like, hey, what are you doing? First of all, it was late. So, like, I'm like, what if I had someone? Like, right. What little faith do you have in me?
Well,
that you facing me at 10 p.m. on Valentine's Day. What were you trying to catch me doing? Or how little do you believe in me?
Or, and they were like, oh, Alex, you know why.
Yeah.
Did they need help troubleshooting? Like,
no, they wanted to see Gordy is what they wanted. Well, like, show us your dog.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, grandson. They call him their grandson, which also hurts.
Your dog is acclimating himself to New York City. Did you have a dog growing up?
At one point during my middle school, we went to go visit my family in Missouri, and my cousins had dogs, and my mom and her sister are like the exact same person.
Mm-hmm.
So my whole time growing up, my parents were like, no dogs, never a dog. And my cousin got these Shih Tzus, and... my mom was like, we're going to get one. So we got one, but it liked me a lot more than it liked my brother. And my brother got real fucking sad. Oh. He was like a young at the time. And he was 8 or something like that. So my mom was like, all right, we'll get another one. They found one that they could adopt. So we bought mine for like $150
Yeah.
Because it's Missouri. And they just have animals. They have animals in space. And then they adopted this other one. And we went from 0 dogs to 2 dogs.
Yeah.
And then a year later, they had 5 puppies. So we kept 2 of them. So we went from 0 dogs to 4 dogs. And then so my parents for the last like 15 years have had like these 4.
Oh my God.
Shih Tzus. And so that happened. And then one just died. R.I.P. Oreo.
Oh man. What were their names? Oreo.
They're all named after candy except for one, which is
Cookie.
So it's Oreo. Taffy, Chip, like chocolate chip,
uh-huh.
and then Rocky. And so my mom says it's like Rocky Road.
I would say that too.
But I named him after Rocky Balboa.
Oh.
So.
Not Candy.
Yeah, not Candy. He's not Candy.
Was any of this reaction to getting a dog because you were torn away from your friends and everything you knew in New York and moved down to Florida?
Yeah, you should get the kid who was crying a dog.
No, my parents told me when I was eight, I was like, I want a jet ski. And my parents were like, oh, he's eight. He's going to forget. So they were like, all right, cool. We took you away from all your friends. We'll get you a jet ski. And then when I turned 13, which is when you can have one in Florida, I think, I was like, yo, where's my jet ski? My parents like, what the fuck are you talking about? Because 5 years had passed and it was like an
in-passing thing. And they forgot.
And they forgot. I was like, yeah, so when I was eight and you took me away from all my friends and moved me from New York to fucking Florida, you said that it would be dope if I could have a jet ski when I turned 13. And so, yeah, I need that. My parents like, you're not getting a fucking jet ski.
You know, you should get a jet ski now and rub it in their faces.
That's right, yeah. <It's gross. laughs> Yeah. Live your best DJ Khaled life, you know?
Yeah.
Just fill up my living room with water and just go for it.
Full sail.
Yeah. Wait, have you been on a jet ski before?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I mean, it wasn't like Florida, you were just, like, watching Florida, it just go by. Dreams.
It's part of the driving test in Florida is riding a jet ski.
Yeah.
Can you parallel park it?
Yeah. Well, like, you know how everybody dies in Florida on jet skis. Like, it's like a 1 in 3 people that die from jet skis.
Oh, or from, like, morbid. You know, alligators, yeah. Or, it's, like...
Or old age.
Jet skis. Or bath salts.
Alligators, bath salts, and
Florida's
decay.
Just death, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or, like, you know, like a... holes opening up in the ground, yeah. You know. There's just lots of ways to die in Florida.
That's right. Well,
soon flooding from, like,
it's
got dark.
Yeah.
Leave a comment if you know more ways that people die in Florida.
Glad you're living in New York now, Alex.
Oh, yeah, getting shot by toddlers. That's high up there in Florida.
Or racists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming through.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about this podcast, if people want to find out more about us, if people want to find out where to get tickets for this Thursday's show, your girls tour at SOBs here in New York City, where can they go?
You can go to itsthereal.com to get tickets to your girls tour this Thursday night. We were also on soundcloud.com/awasteoftime to listen to all of our podcasts that are available for streaming and download. You can go to iTunes, search for A Waste of Time with It's The Real. We are also on Twitter at It's The Real, Instagram at It's The Real, Facebook at It's The Real. We are on Snapchat at It's The Real, and It's The Real Eric, because It's The Real was taken. And I think that anywhere else, just search for It's The Real.
What should they search for?
It's The Real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, we like to shout out people and get them to shout out this podcast because that's the best way to spread the word. Jeff, who do you want to shout out?
I have so many people to shout out, so give me like half an hour.
Okay, ready?
All right. So first, I want to shout out the four guys from the Sunday Forecast from the Bronx who are on their podcast.
Shout out to them.
Shout out to Nels. Shout out to Rob. Shout out to Steve. Shout out to Not Felix. And shout out to them. You can go to check out their podcast at the Sunday Forecast. I also want to shout out a bunch of people who have been buying tickets to our show, even though they will not be able to make it. So that includes everybody from Brian Kraft in Florida to Jimmy Brantley in North Carolina, Shale Thacker, our mom, Shay Serrano, Anthony Bonilla, Michael Sanchez. There's just a bunch of people. I'm not going to read everybody's names, but just a ton of people that we have to thank, and thank you for everybody who's going to be not even attending the show and still buying tickets. Also, shouts to everybody who will be buying tickets to our show and attending. That's the double whammy, a double dose of us. So thank you so much to everybody.
Yeah, thanks to everyone for showing their support. It's really amazing to see what this could really turn into. And the really cool thing, too, is if we sell out New York City, we can take this on the road. We can go to Atlanta. We can go to North Carolina. We can go to LA. We can go to Chicago. We can go to Toronto and Montreal and all these places where people want us to go.
Guam.
We can go to Guam. Why not? We have a fan base in Guam. Let's go out there. Jeff, I would like to shout out someone in Italy, International Trey. He goes by Trey Treo on Twitter. He's not going to be able to make it to our show because he lives in Italy. But also, it is his wedding anniversary. So, happy anniversary to International Trey and Mrs. Trey. Jeff, we are just 2 days away from our headlining show at SOBs. Do you have any special requests from people who are going to be attending the show?
Yes, bring a ladle.
A ladle? Why is that?
Because if Lil B can get everybody to bring ladles, then we should be able to, too. Is there anything you want anybody to bring?
Yeah, 2 chains. Not for real, for real. Jeff, we'll see you next week.
Yes, sir.